Dave. For the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to another week and a Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. We should be up on YouTube in just a bit, have a few technical difficulties right out of the gate. You could always jump in with us on our brand new phone lines. Yes, this is Infinity Sports Network history, if you really care. We are the first show to debut the new phone lines. That will be now 888-710-4ISN. That's 888. I feel like I'm about to do a cheer. 710-4ISN. 888-710-4ISN. Or if you can't remember all that, it's 888-710-4476. 888-710-4476. You could always as well get at me on the good old cesspool of Twitter and on Instagram, where I'm always straight flexing, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Shaka Smart, the men's head basketball coach at Marquette with the Golden Eagles. He's going to stop by 20 minutes from now. Brad Underwood, the head men's basketball coach at Illinois, is going to join us. And that will be at 4 p.m. Eastern time. John Fanta, tremendous Fox Sports college basketball analyst. He's going to stop by at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific time, as we are in bracket season. Bracket seasons. We did find out the four number one overall seeds last night and the field of 68. You will have Auburn, Florida, Duke, and Houston be the four number one seeds, and we'll see who finds a way to San Antonio for the Final Four this year. So we'll do a ton of March Madness, obviously with Shaka Smart, obviously with Brad Underwood, obviously with John Fanton. I'll give you some commentary and some thoughts on it. But I have to start off in the NFL world. And late last night, we got some breaking news. And this was that Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, this has been speculated, I think last week, towards the end of the week, right? The NFL Network, it was Ian Rapoport and Tom Pelissero. They were saying it's looking likely that not only will Ja'Marr Chase get a big deal, but T. Higgins will as well. So I couldn't say I was surprised when Jordan Schultz got onto the good old cesspool of Twitter last night and said, breaking, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins exclusively tell Jordan Schultz, so a win for Jordan Schultz of the Insider Power Rankings, that they've agreed to contract extensions with the Bengals. Ja'Marr Chase gets a four-year, $161 million deal with $112 million guaranteed, making him the highest-paid non-quarterback in NFL history. And T. Higgins gets a four-year contract, $150 million, with the first 2 years guaranteed, making him the highest-paid wide receiver, too, in NFL history. I've heard a lot of commentary since that, and a lot of commentary since that deal did go down, or since some of the reporting did transpire from last week of, oh, that they're inching closer to getting the deal done, of, okay, well, obviously Joe Burrow's going to get his way. Joe Burrow, right, the franchise quarterback for the Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow, who is the franchise, he wanted Ja'Marr Chase to get paid. You never thought that Ja'Marr Chase wasn't going to get paid. And then also, you take a look at T. Higgins, that was the question if he was going to be able to get paid. And at the end of last season, and for most of last season, I thought T. Higgins was as good as gone with the Cincinnati Bengals. But when your quarterback and really the heartbeat of your franchise says, hey, we need to get Ja'Marr Chase taken care of, and not only Ja'Marr Chase, also T. Higgins, what else are you supposed to do? So people could sit here and people could talk about how this isn't good for the Bengals. I disagree. I'm not going to sit here and say keeping Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins is bad for the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, are there still things to figure out? Absolutely. Like, we look at the other side of the ball, the defense was an unmitigated disaster last year. Lou Anarumo, who is a very good defensive coordinator in this league, he got fired. And now Al Golden's coming in. They've never been able to really replace the presence loss of Jesse Bates. But you have Trey Hendrickson who's sitting there, and Trey Hendrickson, for the second year in a row, wants a new deal. And I would be very surprised at this rate if Trey Hendrickson does get a new deal. And if you put a gun to my head right now, is Trey Hendrickson playing for the Cincinnati Bengals come week one of the NFL season? I would probably lean more no than yes. So are the Bengals perfect? No. Are the Bengals automatically going to be in the AFC Championship game? No. Are the Bengals automatically going to be in the playoffs? No. But you couldn't find a way in this process to disrupt Joe Burrow. And if Joe Burrow snaps his fingers, which he did here, and said, hey, I want to not only keep Ja'Marr Chase, but I also want to keep T. Higgins, then what are you supposed to do? And I know people could say, oh, from football sense, you could get rid of T. Higgins and you could invest that money on the defensive side of the ball. And I hear you, but who was the most complete team in the NFL last year? Wasn't even close. It was the Philadelphia Eagles. The Philadelphia Eagles were able to pay Jalen Hurts. The Philadelphia Eagles were able to pay A.J. Brown. The Philadelphia Eagles were able to pay Devontae Smith and build an unbelievably deep roster on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball. So if Philly could do this, then who am I to sit here on the radio and say, oh, you know what? Cincinnati should have let T. Higgins walk. I'm not going to say that. Now, there are holes still in the Bengals team. Joe Burrow has to stay healthy. They have to get off to better starts. The last few years, they've been a horrendously slow-starting team. The offensive line needs to be better. And oh, yeah, they need a defense that doesn't need to be great, that doesn't need to be very good. The defense just needs to be middle of the pack. Because last year, we saw Joe Burrow lead the league in passing yards, passing touchdowns. Ja'Marr Chase, triple crown winner. Trey Hendrickson led the league in sacks. So I'm not sitting here telling you, hey, the Bengals have it all figured out. But anyone slamming the Bengals for paying both Chase and Higgins, I just don't get it. It's almost like, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because if they let T. Higgins walk out the door, I could guarantee you this. The same people sitting here saying, oh, Cincinnati should have allocated those funds in other places would be saying what? Oh, here go the cheap Bengals again. The Cincinnati Bengals are cheap. I don't sit here when the salary cap is what it is. And it only keeps on going up and up and up. And I've been in press conferences at the end of the season where a team's under the cap by over the cap by $150 million. And people are losing their minds saying, how are they going to get below the cap? And these GMs always figure it out. I'm not going to sit here and slam the Bengals today. And I think, I don't know if it's a majority of the commentary. But there's a good amount of the commentary that I think in the last or less than 24 hours since this news came out, that it's laughable. I really do. Like, your franchise and the success of your franchise is based off the happiness of Joe Burrow. If Joe Burrow says, I'm done with the Bengals, guess what the Bengals go back to being? An irrelevant joke. That's what they end up being. So Joe Burrow saying, hey, I want to not only keep Ja'Marr Chase, but I also want to keep T. Higgins. Good organizations, you don't have to give the quarterback everything what he wants, but there's some things that are non-negotiable. And I'm sure Joe Burrow sat around there and said, well, hey, in Philadelphia, Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown are able to get paid. Hey, in Miami, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle are able to get paid. And now you could fault the Bengals for not paying Ja'Marr Chase last year, and his price already went up and up and up. That's a different conversation. But when push came to shove, they made Ja'Marr Chase the highest player paid non-quarterback in the league, right? They said they were going to do that. And then they also found a way to keep T. Higgins. And I look at Cincinnati this year, I would say they're probably the second team in the AFC North. I give the slight edge to the Baltimore Ravens. But Joe Burrow and the Bengals have done something that the Baltimore Ravens haven't. They've been able, in the AFC, to get to a Super Bowl with Joe Burrow as their quarterback when Lamar Jackson hasn't. You know, I would also say the Bills right now are better than the Bengals. But I've seen Joe Burrow walk into Buffalo, put his feet up, basically drink their beer, eat their food, take their women, and go home with the playoff victory. I've seen Joe Burrow defeat Patrick Mahomes in an AFC championship game. So I wouldn't upset number nine. And yes, I understand that's a slippery slope sometimes when you live and die by what your quarterback wants. But in this case, it's not as if he's saying, oh, let's pay a number three wide receiver, no, like high end, the highest of end number two wide receiver money. No, T. Higgins could go to a lot of other places. Probably like over a quarter of the league, if not more than that, and be their number one wide receiver. So now you have two number one wide receivers. You have a top three, top four quarterback in this league, at worst a top five quarterback, and you know that this team now needs to do two other things. This team needs to get out to better starts, and that's on the coach and Joe Burrow, and they also have to find a way to make it work on defense. But if I sit here and say right now, who are the three best teams in the AFC? Yeah, you do tell me, okay, Chiefs are one, Bills are probably two, and the Ravens are three. So there is a climb that the Bengals need to take when they missed the postseason the last 2 years. But if I ask you who's the fourth best team in the AFC, do you feel confident saying it's the Dolphins? No. Do you feel confident saying it's the Steelers? No. Do you feel confident saying it's the Texans now without Laremy Tunsil? No. Do you feel confident saying it's Justin Herbert, who I just saw with the Chargers throw four interceptions in a playoff game? No. Do you feel confident that it's the Denver Broncos? You know, I like Sean Payton. I like what I saw from Bo Nix. I like what they've done bringing in the two 49ers defensive players to add to Nick Benito and Pat Surtain. But there's still a little skepticism feeling when you say that the Denver Broncos are the fourth best team in the AFC. So I look at the Bengals. The Bengals still have flaws. The Bengals still have warts. The Bengals still need to figure out how to stop a nosebleed on defense. But right now, if you say, hey, Zach, Mahomes, Allen, and Lamar aren't going to the Super Bowl out of the AFC, right? Let's say one gets hurt, one gets surprisingly upset early on in the playoffs, and the other one was to lose an AFC championship game to whatever other team you're going to name. That's not the three that I just named. Aren't you still naming Cincinnati? And yeah, so there's going to be some games where Cincinnati's going to have to score 41 and hold the other team to 40. I get that. I'm not sitting here and telling you that Cincinnati's perfect. But I really don't get from some people what else they wanted the Bengals to do. Like, your quarterback, the heartbeat, the pulse, the man that turned your franchise from the number one overall pick to instantly being a Super Bowl contender, he wanted the best, you know, one of the better non-quarterbacks in football. Not the best, but one of the better non-quarterbacks in football, the second best wide receiver in football, because Jamar Chase is two and then Justin Jefferson is one. He wanted him back. No one's going to argue that. But the argument becomes, should they have brought T. Higgins back? And could they have put somebody else there that could have been productive in the absence of T. Higgins? Sure. Because Joe Burrow's that good and Jamar Chase is that good. But you already had something special that was working. And we've seen them be an AFC championship team. We've seen them get to a Super Bowl. We've seen them lose to an AFC champion in an AFC championship game the following year. And the last 2 years, they've missed out in the postseason. One, because of injury. And this past year, because of a bad defense and a slow start. So I'm not saying that Cincinnati is this great product. But if you roll into a season with Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins, and everyone's happy on the offensive side of the ball, it's up to, right, the rest of the team to figure it out, because they're going to put up a lot of points. You know, Chase Brown's a solid running back, had a good year last year. They're going to be able to put up a ton of points. As long as they're healthy, I'm not going to sit here and lose sleep over the Bengals scoring points, but it's how they're going to stop people. And that's valid. That criticism is valid. But I don't think, with that being said, you should have got rid of T. Higgins in this regard because the quarterback wanted him. Like other teams that spend a lot of money, like other teams that have a lot of other stars, you need to figure it out. Whether it's drafting better, whether it's getting lucky in free agency, you need to simply figure it out. Because there's a lot of other teams that keep their guys and they find a way to get the job done. Look at the Eagles. They were able to pay Devontae Smith, pay A.J. Brown, pay Jalen Hurts, and they had the best roster in the NFL last year. And they won the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to be like some others that are going to crush the Bengals for paying T. Higgins. Because if T. Higgins walked this offseason, or if he got traded, people would probably be saying this, those same people. Oh, it's just the cheap Cincinnati Bengals. So I commend the Bengals for doing what I didn't think was going to be able to get done during the season. And that was not only paying Jamar Chase, but also paying T. Higgins, and we obviously had the Burrow deal taken care of last year. All right, this is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. The ball is almost going to be tipped. We're going to have March Madness getting underway, coming up later on in the week on Tuesday. As you do have the games coming up in Dayton, and we will be in San Antonio for the Final Four. So we're looking forward to two kick-ass shows there on that Thursday and that Friday. When we come on back, Marquette, Shaka Smart, we all remember what he did at VCU, then was at Texas. Well, he's 4 years now at Marquette, and all 4 years he's made the NCAA tournament. So we'll talk about Marquette, a little Big East basketball with Shaka Smart when the Zach Gelb Show continues in 5 minutes. All righty, off and running on a Monday. This is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You hit us up on our new phone lines, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. I got a chance to see this guy's basketball team play on Friday night at Madison Square Garden, and the Marquette Golden Eagles are back in the NCAA tournament for a fourth straight year under our next guest. They will be going up against New Mexico later in the week in a 7-10 matchup in Ohio in the South region, and that's the head men's basketball coach of the Marquette Golden Eagles, and that is Shaka Smart. Coach, appreciate the time as always. Thanks so much for doing this. How you been?
I've been good, man. Good to see you, Zach.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and good to see you as well. So, fourth year at Marquette as the head coach there. You guys are back in the NCAA tournament for a fourth straight year. Just what was the reaction when you heard your name called nice and early last night?
It's always exciting, Selection Sunday, as long as you're on the right side of it. We've been fortunate the last 4 years to know that our name was going to get called. And you know, once your name gets called, the first thing that comes into your mind is the opportunity that you have ahead of you. And so, like you said, we were one of the first teams called, so we didn't have to wait very long. Figured out where we were going and who we're playing and what day we were playing on. And now it's all about the preparation and getting ourselves ready to play.
Right. When we look at your career, obviously when it comes to this tournament, everyone's going to mention what you did at VCU. We saw some good moments and some bad moments at Texas, but the last 4 years have done very well for you, clearly. And obviously, okay, there's some years where you're number two seed and it didn't go as far as you wanted to. Last year you get to a Sweet 16. Just with the last 4 years, what have they kind of meant to you, and how do you kind of reflect on where the program is heading?
Well, most importantly, the players, the guys that I've had the opportunity to be around, the growth that they've made. That's why I coach. That's what my coaches did for me. Obviously, we're judged on wins and losses, and particularly how you do in March. I get that. That's kind of comes along with the territory. But at the same time, you know, we're just grateful to have been able to coach guys like Tyler Kolick, guys like Oso Iguodaro, Omax Prosper, who are now playing in the NBA. And it's not like those guys were household names when they got here. Guys like Cam Jones, Stevie Mitchell, who are two seniors on our team this year. Just grateful for the growth they've made, first and foremost, as people, and then the way that they've impacted Marquette and impacted our program.
You know, it's kind of funny because college basketball changes all the time and there's different eras. Now, when you see a team that has juniors and seniors that have been at that same school for 3 or 4 years, it's unique with NIL and the transfer portal. When you are building, and sometimes, right, trust can be taken away if another school offers more money, just how do you kind of get your guys to stay and continue to be focused on what you guys have been able to build the right way at Marquette?
We just try to bring in the right people. I think if you have the right people and you have great relationships, that's not necessarily a cure-all, but it's going to take you a long way towards what you're going after. Our way isn't for everybody. It's just the way that we choose to do it. I think it fits our institution here at Marquette. Like I said, coaches changed my life. So for me, you know, the young guys that we bring in here and we start developing relationships with them while they're young, I mean, sophomores and juniors in high school, there's real roots there between us and them. And that's why, you know, fortunately, most of the time they stay and they want to be here. And then our job every single day is to get them better.
I always wonder with experience of the NCAA tournament, if you could put a value on it, because we've seen some teams come out of nowhere. We've seen really experienced teams get upset in the first round. Other teams go all the way to cutting down the nets. You guys have experience, you know, in positive ways, and then also some tough times that you're hoping to overcome. Is experience important this time of the year, in your opinion?
Well, I think it can help you if you're willing to really get close to it. And you said it, I think it's winning experience, but also learning what goes into losing in the NCAA tournament. I think when you lose a game like we did last year in the Sweet 16 to NC State, of course, they were on a magic carpet ride and probably would have beaten anyone that day. But it's more looking internally, okay, what could we have done better? And we have quite a few players on our team this year that were part of that game. So I think, again, the willingness to learn from the games that we've won and the games that we've lost over the last few years.
Getting back to the Big East tournament, we all know the emotions that go into that and the unbelievable stage at Madison Square Garden. I saw you guys were up when I was watching the game 24-9, and then St. John's just goes on one of their surges, and they're as one of the best, if not the best team in the country with the way that they're playing right now with their defense. Is it nice that you have, like, basically a week off to kind of be able to flush it, or would you wish that you'd rather be able to play a few days after what occurred in the semifinal?
Really neither. I mean, just because it's not determined by us. So, you know, we knew we'd play on a Thursday or a Friday. So, you know, it's a one-day difference. And I think when you lose, if you lose in the conference tournament, you know, it's kind of a balance of quickly, what can we internalize from that game? But then also very, very quickly, you know, moving on to the next opportunity. Because, you know, I think most coaches would tell you the NCAA tournament trumps the conference tournament in terms of importance. And the difference between the two is once you get to this week, it's win or go home.
You go from one Pitino to the next. You'll be going up against Richard Pitino's squad with New Mexico. I know you guys have some mutual connections, and when you're in the coaching fraternity as long as you've been, obviously you've had conversations throughout the years. Just what is your first thought on the job he's done this year and also the squad that they have?
Richard's done a terrific job. You know, obviously winning an incredible league out there in the Mountain West. The group that he's put together are obviously very connected. They've got tough, experienced, older guys that play really well together. Defensively, they're one of the best teams in the country. You know, interesting, not the same as us, but in their own way, very, very disruptive and steal the ball from people and take people out of what they're trying to do with their pick and roll coverage. So it'll be a fun challenge for us. I've known Richard forever. He actually replaced me at the University of Florida when I left to go to VCU, and got a ton of respect for him.
When we get to your team and we take a look, you know, when I always think of you, I think of defense, and I always love when I watch you coach, like on Friday night when your team's trying to get back in the game or they're going on a run and you're slapping the court on the sideline. It's got to be fun for you to coach Stevie Mitchell, especially with the defense that he brings to this team.
Yeah, he's awesome. We're going to miss him a lot next year and in the future because he's special, one of a kind. I would put him up there with a guy I coached at VCU named Briante Weber as the best, you know, defensive guards I've ever been around. He just has great energy, gets his hands on the basketball, and we're going to need him to be at a high level because Donovan Dent is one of the best guards in the country. He's got a real burst to him, does an awesome job getting in the paint and then making decisions for his team.
I know you're hoping this thing goes for a few more weeks, but with the season and, you know, a senior player like Cam Jones that he's had for you, how do you kind of describe what Cam's been able to do for this team this year?
He's been terrific. He's been so much fun to coach. I'm really proud of his growth as a person in the last 4 years. He came in here as a guy that really was unsure and not as good at communicating as he is now. And, you know, now he's flat out our leader. And, you know, he's the one that speaks at the end of every huddle. He's the one that, you know, sets the tone for us in terms of our philosophy and our approach. And yes, his college career has, you know, maximum 3 weeks left, but he's going to be playing this game for a long time.
Well, Coach, we always appreciate you and jump on board with us. Good luck later on the week up against New Mexico, and we thank you for doing this.
You got it, Zach. Thank you.
You got it. There he is, Shaka Smart, always kind enough to join us on the Infinity Sports Network with the Zach Gelb Show. You will have Marquette going up against New Mexico later on in the week as we find out a little bit more about the Golden Eagles. And I was at the Garden for the Big East tournament. Just what an environment. I was there Thursday during the day. I was there Friday night, And just to see what St. John's has been able to do is really something. Like, Pitino, no one should be surprised by his success. But when you look at a place that I guess you could say there was starting to be apathy and people started to say, oh, it's just you keep on bringing in new coaches and, you know, we're looking back to 25, 30 years ago. You know, last time St. John's was in a Big East Conference Tournament Championship game up until Saturday was 2000. And to see Pitino in his first 2 years on the job, and I know with his career, if you historically look at it, everywhere he's gone, there's a huge jump in year two. But to see what they've been able to do from last year, just missing the NCAA tournament, where last year I thought the Big East was greatly disrespected. When you look back at teams like Seton Hall and St. John's, right? And there was a few others as well. And to see where they were a year ago, and then you see a player like Zubi Ojafor, who as at Kansas was barely doing anything. Last year, you know, had a role on the team, but then this year drops, what, 33 points in that semifinal game up against Marquette? To see the growth like that and to not only have the most improved player, to have the Big East, you know, conference player of the year and Rick obviously being the coach of the year, that is remarkable. Even for his resume and for his standards, to bring a place that was basically just there, like felt down and out, to take him to not only winning a regular season championship, but then the conference tournament championship. And now they have a two seed where they're going to play late on a Thursday night in Providence up against Omaha. Man, that's something really special with St. John's. And we'll see what the Big East does this year. Because there was a lot of complaining last year, obviously, about the Big East, and they should have got more teams in. We know UConn has won the last two NCAA championships. We know UConn is not as strong as the way that they've been the last 2 years, but they're still always going to be a tough out, and that's a fun 8-9 matchup in the coaching world with Porter Moser with Oklahoma going up against Danny Hurley. But St. John's is definitely the draw this year, and that's a team that all eyes are going to be paying attention to out of the Big East. And, yeah, you'll be monitoring Creighton. You'll be monitoring Marquette. You know, you got Xavier. We'll see what happens with Xavier as they go up against Texas, and the winner is going to get Illinois. And Brad Underwood's going to, by the way, join us coming up in about 30 minutes from now at the top of the hour at 4 p.m. Eastern time. But that St. John's team, they were a whole lot of fun to watch just seeing the last few days. And they're a very good defensive team. They go on these incredible runs. It's basically the same script that you saw on Friday into Saturday. But the question's going to be, can they, and I know it sounds like simple analysis, but they go on some cold stretches shooting the basketball. And I mean, not just like, oh, like you're shooting 30%. Like, like you look up sometimes at like 2 of 18 from three or something like that. So those shots are going to fall. And I've heard Pitino say it, they could lose early in the second round, or they could find a way to go all the way to the Final Four. So clearly the SEC with the 14 teams, that's a huge storyline. UNC getting in, which surprised a lot of people. Duke with the health of Cooper Flagg. But then you look at coaching, you know, the only coach in this tournament, you know, you got Izzo. Obviously, you look around, there's some other good coaches, Calipari, Bill Self, right, that have accomplished a lot. But I think from a face of the tournament standpoint, you know, no disrespect to the number one seeds with John Shire, with Golden, with Bruce Pearl, who I'm a big fan of, you know, and you go through all these, and even Kelvin Sampson, the two biggest name coaches in this tournament in terms of being the face of the sport right now are Dan Hurley, but they don't have the seed this year to reflect that buzz being an 8 seed. But if they beat Oklahoma and they play Florida, okay, that's a fun round of 32 matchup. But I don't think there's a bigger star coaching-wise in this tournament than Rick Pitino. All righty, we'll take a break. Appreciate Coach Shaka Smart for joining us. It is the Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. By the way, we have a new phone number, 888-710-4ISN. And every time I say that, I do feel like I'm chanting something. 888-710-4ISN. Seems like a cheesy jingle. And if you can't gather what that is in terms of all the numbers, it's 888-710-4476. That's how you can now call not only our show, but also all the other shows in the network besides Rich Eisen. So if you're a fan of Maggie and Perloff, 888-710-4ISN. If you're a fan of Bill Ryder, 888-710-4ISN. If you're a fan of Zach Gelb, 888-710-4ISN. If you are a fan of JR Sport Brief, 888-710-4ISN. If you're a fan of Bart Winkler, 888-710-4ISN, or all the weekend shows. I would say an overnight show, but we don't have a set person in the overnight yet with Amy leaving the company. So any of the fill-ins on the overnight, 888-710-4ISN. I can't wait till Jody Mack hosts this weekend. I'll just say that. He's gonna be like 888. You know, what's the old number now? I just forgot the. I used to
855-212-4227.
Thank you.
I shouldn't say that anymore.
No, yeah. You know, Jody Mack's be like 855. I mean, 888-710-4ISN. CBS, I mean, ISN.
Or that's the wrong station.
Yeah. Yeah, he's gonna. Mack Attack on WIP. I mean, Infinity Sports Network. I heard Jody this morning, actually. On WIP, I guess he was filling in, or maybe they have him on for a segment. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, it had to be more than a segment. He was probably filling in.
The great Joe DeCameron vacation?
I don't know. No, Joe was there. Maybe it was John Ritchie.
Okay.
But
also the great John.
Joe Wechter, who's a legendary producer there, has been with WIP for 38 years. I actually had a nice conversation with Joe over the weekend because we remained close. He was the producer for Angela for all those years when I interned. He told me, kind of keep it on the hush, but he was retiring. Yeah. So they announced that today, and I was listening to the segment, and as right before they get to the segment announcing this guy's retirement, Joe Wechter, who is an unbelievable dude, you know, really taught me a lot in terms of audio and entertainment, and just also how to treat people the right way in this business.
None like me.
Yeah. Oh, we don't need to get to saying all these nice things about you just yet, Ack. We need a little longer
run. I'm
not
nice to people.
Yeah. We need a little longer run. Yeah. But right before they go to this announcement of Joe Wechter leaving WIP in Philadelphia, Jody's like, I've noticed when I fill in here at 7 a.m., I could get down to the lobby easily to go get a smoking. But he goes, once 9 o'clock hits and the office starts to fill up, it's a little bit of a rush. And I cut it very close to getting back to the studio because there's more people than in the building at 9 a.m.
Well, back in the day when we did Ion Football.
Yeah.
Or
the last 2 hours.
Football,
yeah.
Yeah. Jody, when he was sensing the end of the segment, he'd be out the door by the time the segment ended.
Smoke break, Ack. Come on.
I'm like, Jody, what happens? Something broken. I come back. You know, it's like, but he had to maximize
that
8 minutes.
Like? Big touchdown. Who's going? Jamar? Sorry. Had a little smoke break right there.
He quit for a long time and then.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I never knew Jody then when he wasn't.
Maybe smoking. Not for a long time, but like a year or so, maybe.
Oh,
at least.
Wow. Yeah. I guess he wasn't able to hold it off.
No, it's very difficult.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a timeout. We come on back. UNC sneaks into the tournament. What does it mean for the future of college basketball? And now we have politicians in the sports world, which I never like. Update time first, though. We'll get to all that on the other side. Here is Rich Ackerman. All right, it is Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. So every time, whether it's a college football playoff or you have the NCAA tournament, and I guess it's newer in college football, because to be fair, we didn't have a lot of years in the four-team format where there was a lot of complaining. When it was just two teams and a computer decided it, that was different. But in a 12-team format, this year, when Alabama fans were like, oh, he should be in, and I go, well, he didn't have the resume to go. So, if you couldn't do enough to make it distinct, to make it clear and obvious that you deserve to be in the college football playoff, well, I don't really want to hear from you. So I didn't have a gripe with college football playoff this year and the 12 teams that got in. Now, when it comes to the NCAA tournament, we have a field of 68. So I usually, just by principle, when a team doesn't get in, I don't lose my mind in the field of 68. So if you're expecting me to lose my mind over UNC not getting in, I'm just not going to do that. But I could also acknowledge that it does feel a little rotten here that UNC got in. So I saw Barrett Salee, because I didn't think UNC was getting in. Now they lose to Duke, which, by the way, Duke was blowing him out. UNC gets back in the game, and you have a lane violation. You know, I've seen, obviously, weird things. Team called timeouts when they don't have it. We've seen lane violations before, but I could never remember, and I'm sure it's out there in the history of the sport, where it was such a clear and, because sometimes it gets ticky-tacky, they let them get away with things, but it was such a clear and obvious lane violation that cost UNC the game up against Duke. And if UNC would have won that game, would some people have said, oh, Duke wasn't fully armed, so they shouldn't get in? Yeah, I'm sure there would be those people out there, but I don't think the conversation is as great as what it was in the last 24 hours or less than 24 hours. But Barrett Salid did a great job. North Carolina was 1-12 versus quad one opponents. Indiana, right, who got rid of Mike Woodson and he was still there, right, coaching out the season. They were 4-13. West Virginia, this was the big gripe. They were 6-10. And Ohio State was 6-11 versus quad one. Now, Indiana is in the Big Ten. Ohio State is in the Big Ten. And West Virginia is in the Big 12. And UNC is in the ACC. So you can't really sell me, oh, it's them being in the ACC this year as to why they got in. Like, you just can't. The numbers are the numbers. And I know the games and all the victories aren't created equal. But when the discrepancy is that large, yeah, I will even say I don't see how UNC should have been in over a school like West Virginia. And DeVries, right, we saw the combination of the coach and the dad. The coach and the son, right, and what they were able to do at Drake. And now they're at West Virginia, and the son hasn't been playing since, like, November. All right? And you have Bubba Cunningham talking about on other shows, I think it was Christopher Mad Dog Russo, how that injury played a factor. Like, they had a large, they were like 13-10 or something like that without him. So Bubba Cunningham, you know that name. He's the AD at North Carolina. He's also the leader of the chair for the NCAA tournament. He was the chairperson for the selection committee this year. So this is Bubba Cunningham on CBS. As Seth Davis asked a very good question here, like, hey, people are going to look at this and say, Bubba, the only reason UNC got in is because you're leading this entire thing this year. And this is what Bubba had to say, cut one.
Obviously, I'm going to defer that to Keith. But, you know, all the policies and procedures were followed, and Keith can address exactly how North Carolina was discussed, because I was not in room for any of that.
So let's hear from Keith Gill on CBS, who then talked about Bubba Cunningham's role in UNC getting in.
As the vice chair, I managed all the conversations that we had about North Carolina, and we had quite a few. Our policies require the AD of any school to recuse themselves and actually leave the room for those discussions. And they're not allowed to participate in any vote as well. So we follow those.
So you could say that, and that's fine. And maybe that's the way that it did go down. But Bubba is still being the leader of all this, even if he's recusing himself and gutting out of the room, does that still influence other people on the committee? Because it does seem, right, from afar, right? And I'm someone that, like, you get the understanding of the process and what it is as well. And I thought Keith Gill did a good job on the spot after Bubba basically deflected and passed it off to him in to make that make sense. But you will still have people that are going to be like, wait, now hold on a second. UNC doesn't really have a leg to stand on here outside of the brand of UNC for getting into this tournament, and their AD is running this whole thing. That's when you're going to get people that are going to be saying, how much can you actually believe what was being sold? So now the West Virginia governor, is this right, Santer? This is when I hate when politicians do this. They try to suck up, right, to the people that vote for them whenever there's an issue in sports. So is he like launching an investigation here, Santer, on the NCAA?
Well, here's what I think would be the best thing for me to say. I will let Mr. Patrick Morrissey, the governor of West Virginia, speak for himself on what he thinks may or may not have been going on.
All right, let's listen up, because I always find politicians to really feel out of place when they enter the sports world. But here's the suck-up spot by the governor of West Virginia.
Everyone had WU as a shoe-in for the tournament. In fact, leading up to Selection Sunday, 111 out of the 111 bracketologists projected WVU to make the tournament. And for good reason. West Virginia deserved to be in the NCAA tournament. This was a miscarriage of justice and robbery at the highest levels. Any way you slice it, this thing reeks of corruption. And I've asked Attorney General McCuskey to launch an investigation into the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee to determine if any backroom deals, corruption, bribes, or any nefarious activity occurred during the selection process.
He had me for about 37 seconds of the 46 seconds. At the end, like what, Bubba, here's $100, put UNC in the NCAA tournament. Like, give me a break. So, you know what? He would be a good sports talk radio caller. That was like solid for about 35, 36 seconds. And then any more than that, it was like, okay, you could just hang up on him and move on.
The one thing I will say is I mean, he was talking for like 20 minutes.
Oh, a politician rambling? Surprise.
I know, shocker. So I cut out a bunch of it, but he started talking about quad one wins. He was breaking it down.
Yeah, no, he was informed.
He was really getting in there and talking about, you know, their resume,
sure,
and the record, like you said, with the mm-hmm. with their player being injured and how UNC, he called out Bubba Cunningham.
Yeah.
He was getting hardcore into it.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he calls us later at 888-710-4ISN, which is the new phone line, 888-710-4476. He sounds like he'd be a good sports talk radio caller, so good for him. Will it accomplish anything? Absolutely not. Coach Brad Underwood joins us next. We'll talk about the Fighting Illini on the Zach Gelb Show.